The following presentation was made available by Inspiration Express as part of the Kisser Shulchan Aruch calendar program. There are many more free lectures and resources available at www.kitzer365.org. Today's lecture is given by Rabbi Micha Cohen.
Simen Kuf Memhe. This simen deals with Hilchos Ishus, the laws of husbandry. It means the laws of having a family. And the main mitzvah that it discusses is the mitzvah of Pirvei Riviyah, which is the first mitzvah in the Torah, and that is the mitzvah to be fruitful and multiply. The Sefer HaChinuch tells us two very interesting reasons or ways we can appreciate this mitzvah. The first is, he says, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the world to be inhabited. Hashem just didn't make the world for it to be empty. And the second reason, he says, is that Hashem created the Torah to be kept by human beings. So, by bringing more people into the world who could keep the Torah, by doing that, it's going to create more people to do the will of Hashem. And therefore, it's going to bring a more kavod shamayim, more glory for the sake of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Another important point is mentioned by the Ravid, which is that unlike the animal kingdom, the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up the world is that when two people get married and have a family together, they're meant to stay together throughout their lives. Unlike an animal kingdom, where every spring, male and female animals have children, have offsprings, and then the next year, they go on to someone else. And Hashem wanted, with human beings, not to be that way. To be that you have a husband and a wife, and they stay together throughout their lives. And we find in the Gemara tells us that a person's without a wife, he's without simcha, he's without joy, he's not complete. And the idea is that the actual relationship, the actual idea of being married is something that the Torah views as a very positive thing, and it's something that through it a person gets their completion as a human being. Sif Aleph. Chayiv kol adam lisa isha. Now we're discussing the obligation to get married. So every man is obligated to marry a woman. They live first for lerbos in order to have a family. Now, it's interesting to point out that this obligation is primarily on a man. And even if a man is not necessarily interested in getting married, but he has a mitzvah to do so, a woman, interestingly, can do what she wants. She wants to get married, she has a mitzvah to do so. She doesn't want to get married, she's not obligated. When does this mitzvah begin? Right, most mitzvahs begin from bar mitzvah. But this mitzvah begins when a man becomes 18 years old. Now, why does it begin when he becomes 18? Why doesn't he get married when he's 13? So there's different explanations given. One explanation is because he needs 5 years to learn Torah. So 13 plus 5 is 18. Other reasons given are because in order to have a family, you have to be able to support a family, and you have to be able to be knowledgeable, and all those things. So therefore, if a person is spending time getting to the point in their life when they're mature enough to have a family, then obviously that is when they become obligated in the mitzvah, not before that. And as a general rule, you know, people always want to know, well, when are they obligated to get married? And I think that's the basic idea, that marriage is obviously not just being able to have children. Marriage means to be able to bring up a family and be responsible, and that's all part of what the Torah wants. V'alkoponim lo yavar me'esrim shana b'lo isha, and the Shulchan Aruch at least says that he shouldn't go beyond the year 20, not married. Obviously, in different communities, they have different customs, and each person needs guidance from the Rebbe, but the idea is that if a person's involved in preparing themselves, that they should be able to get married, then that's obviously a reason to push it off, whereas if a person could get married, then they have a mitzvah to do so. Rakim Isaac Bater Basmada, but if a person is learning very diligently, Humasyari Lisa Isha, but he's afraid if he's gonna get married, he won't be able to learn Kadeshla Yisbatla Dekach Milimudai, Mutalis Acher, then he'll be able to get married later. V'hu k'she'en yisrim is gabralov, but that's when he doesn't have an issue with his yetzer hara, with impure thoughts, and these types of things, that then he should get married at an earlier stage. Sif base. Kivan shohalid ben ubas. Now, when is it considered that a person fulfilled the mitzvah of piriv rivya? He says, when a person has a son and a daughter, kiyam mitzvah piriv rivya. Now, it is unique, the mitzvah of piriv rivya, in the sense that a person being able to have a child is not necessarily up to them. It's up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Acharonim write that really a person's main fulfillment of the mitzvah is doing what's possible for them to do, by getting married and doing whatever necessary steps it takes in order to have a child. And now, according to that logic, if a person, let's say, tries, and for whatever reason they're unable to have children, so according to this approach, then it's considered that they fulfilled the mitzvah because they did all that is in their capabilities. Now the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch continues, V'hu shalo yeh aben sris habas ailanis, that a person fulfills his mitzvah of piriv rivya by having a son and daughter, but that son and daughter has to be able to have children. If that son and daughter are unable to have children, then he didn't fulfill his mitzvah. Nol dulei ben uvasu mesu. Now what happens if unfortunately a person had a son and daughter, but they passed away? Imhenichu banim, if those son and daughters, that son and daughter, left over children, descendants, how is that kibbutz mitzvahs perverivya, then they fulfilled the mitzvah perverivya. The medvar amurim, when is it said, kishahoyu bnei habonim benuvas. That's when the grandchildren were sons and daughters, v'noldu min haben u'min habas, and each one, as the son had a child and the daughter had a child, afal pi shebnei hoylid bas u'bito yolda ben. Even though his son's offspring is a daughter, and his daughter's offspring is a son. But the point is, since in the next generation, there is a son and a daughter, and it comes not from one of the children, in other words, each child has one, so that therefore it's considered that he fulfilled the mitzvah. Because it came from his son and his daughter, he fulfills the mitzvah of piriv rivya. But if one of them, unfortunately, didn't have children at all, even though one of them has a large family, like him a mitzvah, he has not fulfilled the mitzvah. Sif Gimel. Afal pi shekiyam mitzvahs piriv rivya. Now, even though a person fulfilled the mitzvah of piriv rivya, asur lelamoid b'leisha, a person should not remain without a wife. And the reason for that is, first of all, because for a man to have pure thoughts, it's a difficult thing if he's not married. And also, we find that there's a mitzvah to be married, because the Gemara says that a man by himself is not considered complete. V'tzarech sheyisa isha bas banim im efshalai. And if he's able to marry a woman who's childbearing and he could have more children, then he has a mitzvah to do so. And basically the concept is that there's a mitzvah of piriv rivya, of having children, and that's a mitzvah d'oraisa, that's a Torah mitzvah, and he fulfills it when he has a son and a daughter. And to have a larger family is a mitzvah midrabbanan, it's a rabbinic idea of l'arav al tanach yadecha, that later on a person shouldn't give up trying to increase their family. So that's also a mitzvah. So therefore, if it's possible for a person to get remarried and to have more children, then he has a mitzvah. Achim hu mevin ba'atzmo she'enu roi oid l'hoilid. But if he understands that he wouldn't be able to have more children, so tov lo yoyser lisa isha she'enu basbanim, then better he marry a woman who's not in able to have children, so that way he's not holding back a person who could have children from having more children, even if they may not necessarily be obligated. Now this is an interesting case, that he has many children, and he's afraid if he's gonna marry a woman in childbearing years, that it's gonna cause disagreements, because maybe there'll be more children from a different marriage. So therefore he says that it will be permitted for him to marry a woman that's not going to have more children, so therefore it would avoid this sort of friction. But one shouldn't not marry because of this concern, because a man not being married is not considered a good thing, and therefore, even if it could cause a little bit of a issue within the family, it's something that has to be dealt with, but he should still get remarried. Whereas, if it's a question of having additional children, then if it's going to cause issues in the family, since the whole obligation is only a rabbanon obligation, is rabbinic, so therefore, in such a situation, a person is not obligated to do so. Now, obviously, these are sensitive situations, and they need a very astute advice, rabbinic advice, but these are some basic concepts that we find in halacha. Sif Dalet. Nasa Isha, a person married to a woman, Vishasa Imai Esershon of Loyalda, and she remained with him 10 years and she did not give birth, Yeshala Garsha. So the Kitzur brings what's brought in earlier Paiskim, that it's recommended that they get divorced. Why? Because since they're not able to have children together and both have a mitzvah, so let them go and marry someone else. Now, it's interesting because for many generations, many great gedolim, even though they didn't have children, they remained with their, you know, with their spouse, and they didn't practice what the Gemara says. And the Paiskim give different reasons for that. And one reason I believe is brought is because in later generations there's a concern that maybe the husband, the reason why the wife doesn't have children is not the wife's fault, it's because the husband doesn't have the merits in order to have more children. So therefore it's not going to help by marrying someone else when there are problems with him. Now, on a more practical note, there's also a medical issue over here, that if he knows the issues with him, then obviously it's not going to help to marry someone else. But again, the Paiskim can spend a lot of time discussing this whole issue, and the practice for many, among many people, has been, for different reasons, not to go according to this. And like I said, many great gedolim didn't, and it's, again, something that we're just learning now, the basic concepts, but it's something that, on a practical level, definitely needs rabbinic guidance. Sif Hey. Isha Eina Metzuva Al Per Veruvya. As we mentioned before, a woman is not obligated to have children. But nonetheless, it's recommended that she shouldn't stay unmarried, because people will start, having doubts about her and questioning her behavior. So therefore, it's a good idea, a good practice for a woman to be married, and it's a healthy thing. Sif Vav. Yishtal ka'adam likach isha haguna mimishpachas haguna. When it comes to marriage, so a person should associate themselves and marry into a family that's going to be a good influence on them. Shloisha simanim yesh lam Yisrael. The Mishnah tells us that there are three characteristics that Jewish people are supposed to have. Bashanim, they're supposed to be bashful. Rachmanim, they're supposed to be merciful. Gamli chasadim, they do chesed, they do kindness with people. Umisha einlo simanim elu, and the person doesn't have these three simanim, ain't a royally davik boy, is not worthy to be a part of their family. And the idea is that the Gemara tells us that we know that there are certain types of problems with lineage, and the Gemara says that if you want to know a person has good lineage, you look at their character traits, and if they have these good character traits, then that's a test to their good lineage. And there's an interesting point here that people many times look for status, but we see that Chazal said that the best proof of status is a person's own behavior. That person's behavior could be, if it's a very fine behavior, then that itself is the biggest proof to their status. Maybe they have a great ancestor that they don't even know about that was very great. But the point is that the way they act, that's the best testament to a person's status, as opposed to just who a person claims their grandfather is or whatever. Siv Zion. Ishik Sheir. If a person is halachically permitted to be married to her, right? There's no issues with lineage. So afal pi shehu naisa isa b'shvil ha'mamon shela, sheyeshla, even though the reason why this man had particular interest in her was because she's very wealthy, mutter, it's permitted. Now, what the Kitzur is referring to, there's an interesting Gemara. The Gemara says that a person who marries a woman for money, it's considered a bad thing, and the marriage is not going to work well. That's what the Gemara says. And the question is, what does that mean? So the Kitzur is explaining that what it means is that through marriage, a person tries to pull out money that he's not supposed to get, or he causes pain in trying to get that money. That's something that that Chazal looked very were very against. And that Chazal said that such a marriage is not going to be successful, the children aren't going to do well. But if a person marries a person because they happen to be wealthy, then it says that's permitted halachically. Might not be recommended, but that's permitted halachically. So this is where it comes in. That if they want to give the relative, the new son-in-law, a lot of money, and they have no problem doing it, and they want to do it, there's nothing wrong with that. But the person is not getting married. Why? He has a mitzvah to get married, but he's not getting married because he's waiting around. Umamtin, he's waiting on Shiyim Zaisha, Imam Kechepsa. He wants a woman who has a certain amount of money. Or even worse than that, he's already engaged. And they offered him a lot of money, and he agreed. And then they said they can't do it. And now he wants to break off the engagement. So now he's causing tremendous pain to the bride. He's fighting around. So then, in those, if it's an incentive to get married, but when it actually comes to getting the money, a person just lets the in-laws do whatever they want, so that's okay. But if a person is using that the marriage as a way of getting money and is forcing it upon people or not acting properly because of that, so then that's something that Chazal looked down upon. And it said, that the Gemara says that such a behavior is called marrying a woman for money, which they'll have children that aren't proper because of it. And they won't have success, and the marriage won't go well. And the reason is this: the words of the Kitzur here are taken out of the Shulchan Aruch, and that the money that a person gets because of the wife is not called Mamon Shel Yosher, which is a fascinating concept. Now, there's money that's halachically permitted, but it doesn't mean that there's a blessing, that there's bracha in that money. For example, a person works after Chatzos, after midday, on Erev Shabbos, or on Erev Tisha B'Av, certain times. So certain times may be technically permitted to work, but the bracha, the blessing that a person should have with their money, they don't get. So say he'll make $500, but then he'll lose $500. And so the point is that when a person has money, you want to have a bracha in that money. And therefore, the money that a person gets through marriage, he's not really deserving of the money, he's just sort of getting it through marriage. So it's not Mamon Shel Yosher, it's not a straight money that has blessing it. So therefore, a person tries to force the other side to give him money, then he's not going to have atzlacha, he's not going to have success. Says, but if a person takes it happily, whatever they give, whatever they don't give, then he will have success. Now, I did forget to mention when we discussed about a couple that doesn't have children, that according to a certain Paiskim, there's a concept that by adopting children, one could be Makai, one could fulfill, at least at some level, the mitzvah of being fruitful and multiplying. Let's continue with Sif Ches. Am Aretz, a person who's an ignoramus, Lo Yisa Bas Kohen, shouldn't marry the daughter of a Kohen. The Gemara seems to say because a daughter of a Kohen is very distinguished, and therefore he marries a person who's so uneducated that the marriage wouldn't work out well. She'ein Zivugin Al Miyafeh, that the marriage wouldn't work out well. Now, I saw brought that some Paiskim say that in today's day and age, where even a person who's not learned, but he knows the basics, he knows how to read, he knows a little Chumash, that's enough that we don't have this issue of an Am Aretz marrying a Bas Kohen. That's what they say. Now, the next issue that the Kitzur talks about is about the Tzava of Rabbi Yehuda Chassid. Rabbi Yehuda Chassid was a great tzaddik, and he wrote a will to his family, or perhaps to more than that, about certain things that he felt were dangerous to do, maybe for Kabbalistic reasons, whatever reasons that he saw. And there's a lot of discussion about how far to take them, who does it apply to. So the Kitzur, just in one line, broaches the subject, and I'll spend a minute to trying to explain it. He says, "Uman the kapid, a person who's careful, yeshu ladaktik, should be careful, shalalisa isha sheshmak ishem imoy, not to marry a woman who her name is the same name as his mother." Meaning to say, if his mother's name is Sarah, so he shouldn't marry a woman whose name is Sarah. Now, the Nadi Behuda, one of the great Paiskim, was very surprised at Rabbi Yehuda Chassid, at the fact that he had these ideas, because he brought from different Gemaras that seemingly that they weren't so careful about this. And that was the opinion of the Behuda, and the Behuda understands that this whole idea that Rabbi Yehuda Chassid said not to marry people with the same name, say a daughter-in-law with the same name as her mother-in-law, or perhaps a son-in-law with the same name as a father-in-law, that was only said for Rabbi Yehuda Chassid's family, but not for everyone. That was his opinion. Others held differently, and held that it applies for a larger audience, and there is an approach, there are different approaches with this. I believe the Chachamas Adam says that the only problem was if it's three generations, meaning the daughter-in-law having the same name as her mother-in-law, and that mother-in-law having the same name as her mother-in-law. And the idea is that something that's so bizarre, you know, it gets a lot of attention, so therefore it could have some sort of ayin hara. It could have some sort of evil eye, and could cause more din, more judgment in Shemayim, and therefore it's not such a good idea. Others say also if there's an extra name, let's say her name was Sarah and the mother's name was Chaya Sarah, that if it's not exactly the same, it's okay. Some even what they'll do is say the prospective daughter-in-law's name is Chaya Sarah, but no one calls her Chaya Sarah. They'll just call her Sarah. So if they start calling her Chaya Sarah, so then it'll take care of the problem. Now the Kitzer carefully crafts his words, and he says, "Uman the kapit," that who for those that are careful, they should be careful about this. And this is an approach that we find in the Igros Moshe. The Moshe Feinstein writes like this: that many of these types of ideas are only for people that are careful about. So if people have a custom to be careful about, then they need to be careful about it. But if people don't, then we say Hashem guards people that are. Foolish or unknowing, and therefore there's such a concept that if people aren't generally careful about it, they don't have to be careful about it this time either. Let's continue with Sif Tes. Mitzvah Lisa Bas Achaisei Oy Bas Achim. So, this is based on a Gemara that seems to be a mitzvah to marry the daughter of a person's sister or his brother, basically his niece. Now, the reason is a very interesting reason. The reason is because since there's a natural affection to a niece, so therefore they would have a very good marriage. Now, on a practical level, there's a lot of concern about these types of marriages because we know genetically a lot of these things could cause genetic diseases, and many contemporary Paiskim, I believe Tzitzel Eliezer and others, don't recommend it. But I think there is a lesson here that Chazal wanted a good marriage, and therefore they looked positively at marrying a niece because there's a natural affection there, and therefore it's going to be a strong marriage. And then generally, when a person goes into a marriage and looks for a partner in marriage, they should look for someone who they could have a strong relationship with, and that they'll be able to build a strong family. Aval shar kroiva, so the Kitzur continues, of a different relative, ben shi kroiva loy, ol ishtoi, shemesa ishagersha, if it's a different relative, whether it's a relative to him or to his wife, who died or was divorced, ol shi kroiva loha isha chalatzla, lo yisa belisha eleschacham. It's not clear to me what the reasoning behind this last line of the Kitzur is, why these people that are related to him, or to his wife that died or got divorced, that he shouldn't marry them. From what I looked into, what it seems that it has to do with this idea of Rabbi Yehuda Chassid that we mentioned before. Rabbi Yehuda Chassid felt that certain things are shouldn't be done, maybe because he saw in Ruach HaKodesh that down the line, it's not going to be matzliach, it's not going to be successful. And for some reason, some of these relatives had some sort of issue with. That seems to be what the Kitzur is referring to here. Let's continue with Sif Yud. La'olam yehi adam zar b'kvod ishtei. So now we're discussing a little bit the proper way a husband and wife are to treat each other, and it says that a person should be very careful about the honor of his wife. She'ein bracha mitzuya beveisai shel adam el b'shel ishtoi, because bracha, because blessing, is not in a person's house, only in the merit of his wife. V'chein amru chacham levnei dairam, and that's how the chachamim and the gemara gave advice to the people of their generation Kabdu es neshoisechem kedeshetes ashru. If you want to become rich, then make sure to honor your wife. And the idea over here is that the bracha, the blessing that a person has, comes from giving the proper honor to the spouse. Sif Yud Aleph. Also lahashayis im ishtoy afilu sha'achas b'leksuba. We know that when a couple gets married, so under the chuppah, the husband gives the wife a wedding ring, and that the acquisition of the ring makes what's called kedushin, that makes marriage. And also he gives her a ksuba. In the ksuba document, it says that he's going to fulfill all his obligations to her. And in addition, it says that if he were to divorce her, that he would have to pay her a certain amount of money. And if he dies, then she gets that money from his estate. And part of the idea is, the Gemara tells us, is that we don't want a husband, he gets mad at his wife, and he divorces her, so this will be a deterrence from him acting so quickly, because he realizes he wants to divorce her, he has to pay her a lot of money. So that's why Chazal felt it was important to have a ksuba. Now, the halacha is that a person is not allowed to be married, even for a short amount of time, without a ksuba. So therefore, if the ksuba was lost or something happened to it, so there could be a problem. Now, there are ways of dealing with it. I believe some say that he could give her that amount of money, let's say, like a check or something like that, until he's able to go to a rav and to write a new document. There is also a point that in today's day and age, when we observe the Chayim de Rabbeinu Gershon, that we don't marry more than one wife, so he can't really get married. He can't marry someone else without her consent, without her accepting to be divorced. So therefore, it's less of an issue. But whatever it is, the basic halacha is that a person should make sure they know where the ksuba is, and because they're not supposed to be together with their wife, I mean, in the same house, without a ksuba. V'im nevda haksuba, and if it gets lost, tzarech lizor ma'od shalich yelich miyad lebezdin. If it gets lost, to right away go to a rav, to go to a bezdin, lichtev lo ksuba acharis, to write a new ksuba. This is a special language they use. If a ksuba was lost, how to write it, and this needs to be taken care of. Sif Yud Beis. Kayin asa begrusha. A person who's a kayin is not allowed to marry a grusha, a woman who was divorced, bezoina, a woman who had relations with a person who is not allowed to marry a kohen. So that would mean, let's say, if a woman had relations with a non-Jew, so then that woman would not be allowed to marry a kohen. B'chalala, with a woman who came from a marriage between a kohen and someone he wasn't allowed to marry, or b'chalutza, a woman who her husband died without children and she received chalitza. Now, all these women, a kohen is not allowed to marry. The Kitzur continues, Zaina Hainu Afilu Nivala Ba'inis Bilas Isra, even if unfortunately it wasn't her fault, she was forced, Vinasa says Zaina, but she's still not allowed to marry a kain, but Asurala Kain. Khalala, and what's a halala? The Hainu Shinoda, me kain shinosa isha asurala, that she was born from a marriage of a kain to someone she's not allowed to marry. Now, in certain extenuating circumstances, it comes out an issue that, let's say, a kain finds out that his wife, something was wrong, that his wife, there's an issue of her being allowed to be married to him. So there is a question in today's day and age, what is the exact lineage of the Kohanim? And is it lineage 100%? Are they, we consider it to be for sure that they're a Kohanim? Is there some sort of doubt that perhaps if we're not sure if he's really a Kohen, so then he would still be permitted to the wife, especially if it's not clear if it really was an issue, whatever happened. So these are obviously complex issues, but there's a lot of discussion in Paiskim about it, exactly, you know, how to determine someone is a kohen. You know, many times people, let's say especially people that weren't brought up in a firm family, and then they become observant, and they assume that they're a kohen because that's what they heard in the family, but that, if that's not properly documented, then that might not be halachically binding, in the sense that if he were to find it down the line that he has some sort of issue with it, that sometimes a proper bezdin could use that as a little bit of a loophole to deal with such a situation. Obviously, this is complex and needs the a qualified bezin to deal with, but just to open up the ideas, the concepts, it's important to mention. Also, there's a question in general: when two people get married, do they have to check into each other's lineage? And there seems to be a custom that Representative McCluger writes about that we don't check so much into the lineage, unless we know, perhaps, that things are questionable. But there is a takana, an enactment from the rabbis of Lita, this is brought in the Berhetiv, that before a rabbi officiates, the rabbi has an obligation to at least know the basics of it. So it's very common that a responsible rabbi will ask a little bit about the family, want to see the ksubas a little bit before he agrees to marry the couple. Sif Yud Gimel. Kol Isha Shenes Almana Oynes Oishenes Garsha. A woman who is becomes widowed or divorced, loitinosalish acher, she should not marry someone else, acher tamtin, until she waits, tishim yoim, 90 days, chutzmi amagershin, amisis abal, in addition to the day of the divorce or the death of the husband, chutzmi amenesuin, and not including the day of this new marriage, meaning to say 92 days total. Now, what's the reason? The reason is because we have a mitzvah to preserve the lineage of the Jewish people, and therefore, if a woman is going to get divorced, for example, and then get remarried very soon after, and especially in those days that they didn't have ultrasounds and pregnancy tests, and she finds out that she's pregnant, she's not going to necessarily know which husband it's from. So there's going to be a question on the lineage of this child. So because of that, Chazal enacted across the board that we always wait 3 months, because after 3 months we'll be able to know whether or not she is pregnant, and therefore it will be clear who the child's father is. And the Kitzur continues, "Vafil im hi isha she'ena roi lo ledes," even though this woman happens to be old, that she can't even have children anymore. "Vafil hoya bala harishon b'medina sayom," let's say this woman who her husband died, he was away for the past year. So it wouldn't have been possible that she would be pregnant from him. Was in jail. It makes no difference. Why? Because as we find many times, Chazal, when they made an enactment that they felt was very important, they made it across the board. And even if she miscarried in between, so it's quite clear that it's not possible that she should be pregnant with another child. Lemahanila doesn't help. And according to the Kitzur, one should not even become engaged. Ella in Cain Yishava Meshudach Shal Yikonis Lasech Beisat Hazman, unless the fiance makes a shvua and makes an oath that he's not going to be secluded with her, so we don't have to be concerned that maybe a mistake's going to happen and she could possibly become pregnant from him. Avla Machzir Grushasai, but a person who's remarrying his own wife that he divorced, Einot Zerach Lahamtin, then he obviously doesn't have to wait, because over there, it's the same two people, so therefore it doesn't make a difference if she got pregnant from their first marriage or their second marriage.